The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast with Clayton Morris. This is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate. Why do we do it? We do it for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. If you're interested in finding your freedom number, come over to our website at morrisinvest.com/freedom and download your free financial freedom cheat sheet today. What is a foreclosure? Oh, the scary, scary word of real estate investing. That's today's show. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone. I'm Clayton Morris, longtime real estate investor and founder of Morris Invest. I've rehabbed thousands of homes, and this is the show where we talk all about buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income and legacy wealth for you and your family. That's what this channel is all about. So please feel free to look around. We've got tons of great content here and lots of great episodes from the past where we kind of deep dive a lot of these different strategies and tactics to help you as an investor. So today we're going to talk about what is a foreclosure. And of course, that term really became popular over the past few years, 2008, 2009, when so many people were going through foreclosure. Basically, a foreclosure is what happens when a homeowner fails to pay the mortgage. Now, the word homeowner is a little bit of a misnomer. So yes, that homeowner, that poor, sad homeowner, right? A more apt term would be to call that person a borrower. They don't technically own the home yet, right? The bank owns the home and they're paying off that mortgage over a period of 15, 30 years. Well, homeowner is not quite what it means yet. They're borrowing the money in order to live in that home. So that's what a mortgage or deed of trust is. It's a loan agreement for the purchase price of the home minus the down payment. And then the document itself, the document from the bank, puts a lien on the purchased property, making the loan a secured loan. Okay, what does that mean? So a lien, the bank is placing a lien against the property. The bank has a right to that property, that specific property. That's called a secured loan. When you often hear the term unsecured loan, what does that mean? Well, there's no piece of property against the loan. So there's nothing as collateral that the bank could take back. It's very rare. I mean, you'll find unsecured loans, of course, but a secured loan is your typical run-of-the-mill mortgage loan. And therefore, that's what would be foreclosed upon when the bank then decides to take the property back for failure to pay them back. They have a right to that. It's the same thing with a car, right? Repossessed, repo man comes because you haven't paid. They have a loan, they have a lien against that car. They can come and grab that car from you if you haven't paid and they'll take it back. So let's dive into when a lender loans you the money without any collateral, that unsecured loan, they're screwed. I mean, let's be honest. If they don't have a secured loan against a piece of property or a car or collateral, they're just kind of going against your goodwill and hoping that you're paying back. And it's very, very rare to find somebody that's going to, you know, loan money against a property and not make sure that they're in the first lien holder position. What does it mean to be the first lien holder? Well, the bank who has that 30-year mortgage, they have the first lien on that property. So if you don't pay, they're the ones that have the right to that property. You may have a second lien on the property. That might be a home equity line of credit or some other refinance, you know, vehicle against the property. They're in second lien holder position. So this bank has the first position. That means if they foreclose on it, they get the rights to that property. The second lien holder, no, they're basically screwed. So during the big economic collapse of 2007, 2008, those second lien holders, the ones that had the home equity lines of credit on people's properties, they were the banks that got most screwed out of this whole process. So what happens in a foreclosure? Let's dive into that a little bit. The specifics can vary, of course, according to state law, but let's break it down into five key stages that I've written down here. Number one, missed payments. So missed payments are the big, it all starts when that homeowner, the borrower, fails to make those timely mortgage payments. Usually it's because they can't. They have some sort of a hardship, their unemployment, divorce, death, or a medical challenge. Those are the main reasons why people stop paying their mortgage. If you think about it, the reason why, you know, I'm not a big fan of buying raw land, for instance, as an investment vehicle. The reason I love rental properties as an investment tool is that, you know, in a recession or in a hardship, people are going to stop paying on a piece of raw land that they own to ride with their ATV and their son on weekends hunting deer or something, right? They're going to stop paying on that piece of land first. They're maybe stop paying on their car second, or maybe their boat second. The last thing that they're going to stop paying on is their house, their livelihood, the place that they live. So in that situation, foreclosures are very difficult. It is like the last resort. It's the last thing that we want to see happen for any, for anybody. It also makes owning and investing in real estate a really wise decision, because it's often the last, people don't want to lose their house, right? So they're going to fight tooth and nail to do whatever they can to make sure that they can keep their house. If you're in a tough situation, it's essential though you talk to your lender as soon as possible, because often you'll find that they are agreeable. And that there may be some options for you if you're talking to a bank. They may want to avoid it just as much as you do. Because the bottom line is, banks do not want to own real estate. So if they have to foreclose on you, it's a very costly process. They have to file foreclosure in the courts. It's a costly process for them to do this. And they don't want to have to hold this house. They're banks. They make their money off of lending money. They do not make their money on holding real estate. Now what happens is, now they own that house, they have to mow the lawn, they have to keep up with the gutters, make sure the roof's okay, make sure the heat is on in the house so the pipes don't burst, or they get it winterized. They have to pay for all of that. And if the house is in disrepair, how are they going to sell it? They have to go through a process maybe of hiring contractors. The bank does not want to do that. They hate it. And it's costly. So banks will often work with you in an effort to try to keep you from going into foreclosure. I can tell you that. It's 100% the truth. Sometimes, though, the borrower may intentionally stop paying the mortgage because the property may be underwater. It might not be worth what they have a mortgage on it for any longer. In other words, the amount of the mortgage exceeds the value of the home. Or because he's just simply tired of managing the property. Those are any number of reasons why a foreclosure starts. Missed payments. So whatever the reason, the bottom line is the borrower can't or won't meet the terms of the loan. You're going to pay us on the first of every month, $2,000 a month. That's your mortgage. You stop paying, that's when it starts to trigger that foreclosure process. Missed payments is step one. Step two is public notice. Now, after 3 to 6 months, and it varies based on the state, a lender records a public notice with the county recorder's office indicating that you, the borrower, have now defaulted on this mortgage. They have to make this public. In some states, it's called the notice of default. In others, it's called a Liz Pendens, L-I-S-P-E-N-D-E-N-S, Liz Pendens, or that's Latin for suit pending. So again, notice of default or Liz Pendens. Notice of suit pending. So they have to file that publicly. Now, public, people know about it out in the public now, right? It's public notice. And that's when people can kind of, you'll start getting letters in the mail from people who want to try to come in and swoop in and maybe save you. You're going to start noticing that because now it's public record. So after 3 to 6 months, that's when this goes public, depending on state law. And they may even be required under the state law to put this on your front door. So you'll notice back in the foreclosure era, there were a lot of like yellow stickers on people's doors, they have to make the borrowers aware that, hey, you haven't been making your payment. But they have to do this under state law, just in case something's got lost in the mail, which is rare, right? Oh, I didn't pay my mortgage for 6 months because I just never got anything in the mail. I didn't realize it. Right. It's total garbage. But they have to do this, and that's part of the bureaucracy of it. And again, this is why banks don't want to have to do this. It takes too long, and it's costly. They have to send someone out to the house, put stickers on there, file it with the county recorder's office. It is a pain in their butt. Okay. In other words, they're in danger of foreclosure. So you're entering that public notice period right now. It's kind of that, you know, that area one you want to be careful about. Number three is the stage of pre-foreclosure. So after receiving that notice of default from the lender, the borrower enters that grace period known as the pre-foreclosure time. And the bells are ringing here next to me here as I'm recording this. And that is because that pre-foreclosure that's a problem. Once you hit that pre-foreclosure, step three, then stuff's starting to hit the fan a little bit. And during this time, anywhere from 30 to 120 days, on local regulations, the borrower can work out an arrangement with the lender to start the short sale process, which you may go back to the lender and say, look, I can't, you know, I can't keep this house. I just can't do it. And look, I've gone through this process. I mean, I had to go through a foreclosure in Florida years ago. It was very difficult, you know. And I was working with the bank on a short sale, and it was difficult. So you may work out an arrangement with the bank to say, hey, look, I have a mortgage on this property for $300,000, but it's only worth $250,000 now. So I'm paying more than this house is worth. Can we work out a short sale where we'll sell it for less than what I owe you? And the bank is amenable to this. Why is the bank amenable to this? Because they'd rather maybe recoup some of their investment than lose all of it, right? So they'd rather maybe recoup $250,000 than lose $300,000. And therefore, that difference of $50,000 is a write-off for them. That's what so many banks will do is, you know, they'll write down that capital loss. So a short sale is always an option and something you should definitely talk to them about. But if you're an investor, short sales are a fantastic opportunity also to come in and purchase property. I think the first two properties that I ever purchased were short sales as an investor. So they're few and far between these days, and foreclosures are very few and far between. I can count on one hand this year how many foreclosures we've bought. They've just dried up. It's very difficult for homeowners to buy properties any longer. And it's also because basically the time has elapsed now for a lot of these different banks have, you know, gotten past that period now. So they're just not carrying foreclosures on their books anymore, which is great news. We've really turned a corner. So when people say we're in the middle of a bubble, I say, where? Where's this bubble you're talking about? Is it in San Francisco, maybe? I don't know. Is it New York City? I don't know. Certainly not where I invest. I'll tell you that much. So if the borrower pays off this default, though, during this phase, during this pre-foreclosure phase, so if they pay it off, if they get back up into good standing, then the foreclosure ends. And then the borrower avoids eviction and a sale of the property. But if that default is not paid off, then the foreclosure continues. So in that window of 60 days, there may be an opportunity for you to pay this thing off and get back in good standing. And then the foreclosure process goes away. And it's difficult for a bank because sometimes, you know, and they're going to have to pay interest on it too. So you haven't paid for 6 months. You have to pay everything you owe plus all the interest as well to go back and pay all of that as well. So not only you have to go back and pay the what you owe, you have to pay the interest on it as well. But that resets the clock. And now you're back in good standing. And you could start the whole process over again if you had to as a foreclosure process. Number four is if the default is not remedied by the prescribed deadline, then we go to auction. So step four is the auction. Dun, dun, dun. And basically the lender or its representative, you know, the bank's representative will set a date for the home to be sold at sheriff's sale or a foreclosure auction. And the notice of trustee sale, it's recorded at the county recorder's office, and they'll have to deliver notifications to people all around the neighborhood, public notice. And they have to put it in the newspaper. They have to, you know, sometimes they put it on the radio. They have to do all of those things. Auctions can be held on the county courthouse steps. I've bought tons of properties at auction over the years. Or a convention center or some public place. In many states, the borrower has the right of redemption. So if you are the foreclosee, you own the home, and you're scrapping to get all your money together, you have the right to go to that auction as the right of redemption and say, look, I got all my money together. Take this property off auction. I'm here. I'm buying it back. I'm all good. We're all good. So at auction, the home is sold to the highest bidder for a cash payment. But because the pool of buyers there who can afford to pay cash on the spot for a house is limited, many lenders make an agreement with the borrower called a deed in lieu of foreclosure to take the property back, or the bank buys it back at the auction. So you may be able to get a, you know, have an opportunity to work with the bank even up until the point of the auction, which is great. And step five is the post-foreclosure. Step five, post-foreclosure process. So if a third party does not purchase the property at the foreclosure auction, then the lender takes ownership of it. Again, the bank does not want to be in the ownership of property. Then it's known as an REO. If you've heard of REO properties, that's what this is. The bank is now the real estate owned. REO means real estate owned by the bank. And it kind of enters this weird sort of black hole. It's a pain in the butt dealing with REOs, dealing with banks. They're not good at owning properties. They're kind of terrible at it, actually. So when it gets to this process, they're pretty terrible at holding and owning these properties. And they're not good at selling them, to be honest. And it's a pain in the butt for investors to get their hands on these as well. So bank-owned properties are sold in one of two ways. Most often, they're listed by a local real estate agent who is an REO agent. So specifically, there may be a few REO agents in your area who get these properties. So if you're interested in trying to buy one of those, reach out to a local REO agent and make that connection. They do not like to be fooled around with, though. Typically, they have their investors they work with, and they don't like tire kickers. So if you are just kind of kicking tires and thinking about buying these properties from these real estate agents at a discounted price, they don't like to fool around. They know who their investors are, and their investors bring cash to the table, and they do not fool around, and they have to close very quickly. They're listed by a local real estate agent on the open market, or you can have like Zillow and other places will list bank-owned properties on their websites as well. So bank-owned auction properties you can have at the liquidation auction. They're often held in auction houses or convention centers. So you can go to like auction.com, or Zillow will have some of these REO properties as well listed there. Usually they have to be funneled though through an REO agent who's listing that property. So a couple of ways to deal with the post-foreclosure process, but there it is in a nutshell. That's how a foreclosure works. It can be a little scary, but it's also a great way to pick up properties if you come across foreclosures and they're available. You want to do your due diligence on it because chances are it's been sitting there for a long time. It's going to need a lot of repair. It might not have been winterized properly, pipes burst. You know, you can have a lot of issues with foreclosed properties, but they are few and far between these days, which is also good news for the health of the housing economy. I'm Clayton Morris. If you have any questions about this, I'd love to hear your comments, thoughts, concerns, questions about real estate investing. And if you're ready to book a call with our team, that's what we do all day long. We help investors get rental properties. We take care of it soup to nuts. And you're ready to check it out, please come on over to our website, see what we have to offer, book a call with our team, and we do it all for you, soup to nuts. We find the property, we rehab the property, we sell you the property, collect the great tenant in the property, and you don't have to do anything. So check us out. Come on over to morrisinvest.com, and we'd be happy to help you jump on the phone and talk with you. Until next time, everyone, now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. We'll see you next time on the Investing in Real Estate Show. Bye, everyone.